I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Friday Views brought to you by Yahoo Sports Canada. My name is Iman, and I am joined by 2019 world champions right behind you. I am joined by Asad. Asad, what is up?
That's going good, going good.
And everybody, you guys know the rules already. Like, subscribe, share with your friends, tell everybody about it. Because the Raptors are on a win streak, so things are looking good over here. Last week, Katie and I kind of had a positive spin on a sad-ish feel because the Raptors were struggling against the Detroit Pistons and the Cleveland Cavaliers. We don't have to relive that. But this week, things are sunny. They are in California, they're in Arizona, and they're winning games. What are your thoughts on this five-game win streak?
They're winning games. That's all that matters. It's been awesome. You know, like, you're injured, you're down. Some games you have Fred, some games you don't. Gary's sick. Gary's not hitting his shots. Some days he's hot lava fire. The next day he can't hit the side of a barn. And through it all, they found a way to win every single game, whether it's with defense, whether it's, you know, going out on a big run, the Denver game where you have a bench lineup that does everything. So we've seen basically every player have a game, with many players having multiple games. And for them to be able to do that in what was going to effectively be their last chance at making a push for the top six, like, going into this West Coast road trip, it was like, well, you're injured, you're going on the West Coast, you're playing some really hard teams, you know, and the Lakers. So basically, I was thinking they were going to maybe split this whole week. And then they go and they win it out, which is kind of insane. So now they're back right there, basically tied with the Cavs for the sixth spot, and they have a shot at it. So I think it's good vibes all around. Like, there's really nothing to complain about.
It really is. And it's unfortunate because as part of that road trip, they started it off with Cleveland, and that's kind of the one game that you really felt like you needed to win. And in all honesty, after that loss, I kind of thought six seed is out of reach. But then this win streak happens, and we're right there, baby. It's tied. What are your thoughts? You mentioned that you think the Raptors could potentially sneak into the top six. Now, Chicago's kind of floundering a little bit. They've got a lot of tough games in next week where they're facing these teams that they're competing with for a top six team seed, I should say. What are your thoughts? Do the Raptors have a chance?
They have as good a chance as anything. Really, I think the Raptors kind of control their fate when it comes to it, because they get to play all the teams that are ahead of them. They get to play Philly. They get to play the Bulls. They get to play the Cavs. And they get to play Boston, I believe. Mm-hmm. So all those games count for double, right? Because if you win, they lose, and you get to move up. So if the Raptors show up, they win out, they get a lot of those games at home as well. And they get a long homestand to close it. So effectively, if it's like, all right, you can get healthy, you know, you're hoping Fred VanVleet with that giant knee pad can bring it up. Ken Birch looked like he was looking very healthy the last game against the Clippers, and he's starting to get back into rhythm. Precious Achiuwa is looking great. And Scotty and Pascal are looking just like all world right now. And you're hoping that maybe OG Anunoby joins them in a bit. And maybe Gary Trent, once he gets over his sickness, can refine that shot that, you know, he went supernova against Phoenix, right? If you have those pieces, again, this team was competitive before the All-Star break, before they got hurt. They went on a big run, and there's no reason they can't do it again. They've beaten Philly without, of course, it was before James Harden, but, you know, it's not like the Raptors don't have the personnel to cause them issues the same way the other way. So it's really just about, they have the ability to be competitive with all these teams. The East is going to be an absolute train wreck when it comes to the playoffs. So this is your shot at kind of like gauging yourself, like, okay, any of these teams could be your first round opponent. Because even if the Raptors end up in seventh or sixth, they could get up to fifth, potentially, right? Fifth or fourth, maybe. You have no control over who your opponent's going to be. They really only have a shot at home court. So this is kind of a test going into it, right? Like, these are the teams you're going to face. Can you compete and beat them when you actually need to win? So it's going to be, it's going to be a very, I think this next, the next 2 weeks are going to be very revealing as to what, like, what this Raptors team can really do.
It's interesting because I was speaking with Justin Rowan on the latest Dishes and Dimes episode, and he was mentioning that this is as much a test for the Cavs as the playoffs will be, because they've never really been in a situation where they've had to fight for their lives. This is the, you know, for Darius Garland, for a lot of Evan Mobley, for Jared Allen, this is sort of the first time that they're in the position that they're in, whereas the Raptor guys, they've won a championship. They've been there. They've done that. They have the experience. So this is really a team that has that going into these final 13, 14 games, whatever it may be, which I think gives the Raptors an edge over some of these other teams. Zach LaVine has never been in this situation before, right? Like, there are a lot of other teams that just don't have the experience that the Raptors have.
Yeah. And when it comes to the Cavs, like, the one of the biggest worries is, like, if they drop into the play-in, now suddenly it's like, well, if Jared Allen isn't fully healthy and you play the Nets and the Nets beat you, now suddenly it's like, oh, we went from being, like, basically top five, top four seed almost all season to now suddenly, hey, we, like, one hot game from Trae Young or LaMelo Ball and we're out of there, right? So it's kind of scary to drop into the play-in, especially when they're not as experienced. So for them, like, again, all these teams are kind of facing the same thing. The Bulls as well, like, they're dealing with their injuries. Zach LaVine's kind of monitoring his knee injury. I think he has a knee issue he's been monitoring, and they're trying to get Caruso back in the fold. And I think Lonzo Ball, I don't remember if he's back yet or not, but they're kind of still getting everyone back and just hoping DeMar can carry them. And they have a brutal schedule to end it. I do not know if the Bulls can hold on to the top four, top five seed. If they do, you know, all the credit to them. They've been a surprise team all season in what looks like a team that shouldn't be maybe as defensively sound or be as like, seemed like it would have more holes. They've been very good throughout the season. So these next 2 weeks are going to be hilarious. I think every single day you're going to see teams kind of flopping from, like, anywhere from the 3 to the 7 seed at some point. So it's going to be adventurous times ahead.
The Eastern Conference is going to be a mess. This is the best time for basketball. People kind of talk about the end of the season as the doldrums, just waiting for the playoffs. Not this year, not in the Eastern Conference.
And with the Eastern Conference, like, just to get into it, like, I was thinking about first round series the other day, and it's like, well, literally every combination of series is, like, sounds like a headache. Like, if you're Philly, like, you're literally like, do you want to play Boston in the first round? Does anybody want to play Toronto in the first round, where you're just dealing with, like, switchable defense the entire time, and you know you're going to be facing some janky stuff from Nick Nurse and you won't be able to run anything? And then if you're at the bottom, I think, like, if you're the Heat, you're the one seed, you work that hard, and what, you might end up playing the Nets? Or if you're the Bucks,
Kyrie has been on a
you're playing a healthy Kyrie and KD. Like, I know you have the stats for Kyrie, but Kyrie's been going insane. Like, I don't think if you're the Heat or the Nets, you want to deal the Heat or the Bucks, you want to deal with that in the first round.
No, and I don't think if you're, you know, maybe the Raptors have a better shot just because Kyrie Irving can't play the game in Toronto and possibly can't play a game in Brooklyn by the time the play-in comes around. But if you're Cleveland, imagine having to go up against them or the Hawks. It's just going to be a mess. Or, you know, Chicago's kind of on a tailspin. If they can't sort of right the ship, especially considering how difficult their stretch is, imagine having this, you know, Cinderella season. And now you're in a play-in game against Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, and then, like, if you lose that play-in game, your first-round matchup is the Miami Heat. That would be quite, like, I think it's basically gotten to a point where the 8 teams that are in the race for the East, because the Nets have fallen so far down, is that the matchups are just going to be ridiculous. And, I can't wait for the first round, just because I know that every combination of series is going to be a good series. Like, even if the thing is with Cleveland, like, usually young teams are usually the easy mark in the first round, but Cleveland has so much size. Like, their young guys are so sized and they're so defensively sound, and then they have Kevin Love playing great ball for them as a veteran. They're going to be trouble for every team, because teams are going to just have trouble scoring down low. And what the thing is, in the playoffs, the teams that do the best are the ones that take away the easy points. So if you've got a young team that just by their nature has two bigs and they're taking away, like, a Bucks-Cavs series, like, is it really going to be that easy for Giannis to be going through Jared Allen and Evan Mobley every single possession down? I don't know. Like, no. It's going to be an interesting 7-game series, I think, any combination. So
it's really going to come down to health for a lot of these teams are so banged up. Like, even the Cleveland Cavaliers, it's unfortunate that their season might just come down to they're just not healthy enough towards the end of the year. And also for the Nets, it's not a shoo-in that they're a top 8 team. They might be in that 9-10 spot. They're only a game up of the 10 seed. And so they may be in a do or die situation themselves. So, I mean, basketball is just going to be so much fun in March and April. And I'm not talking about March Madness, you guys. But someone who's going to have a giant role is going to be Pascal Siakam. And really, he will be, I think, in my opinion, at least the determining factor on how well the Raptors do. He's been superb in the month of March here. And in the last 5 games, their 5-game win streak, Pascal Siakam is averaging over 27 points on over 51% shooting. He's shooting 50% from deep as well. 82% from the line and getting 8 boards and 6 assists on that. So he's just been ridiculous these last 5 games over this Western Conference road trip. He's playing like an all-NBA player. We all keep saying it.
Yeah, really, he was playing like an all-NBA player going into the All-Star break as well. And then, you know, took him a couple games to get his groove back. But like, even if you go with the whole March, all 9 games, that's what his stats are. 27 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. On 51% shooting, and his usage rate is at like 27%, which is as high as it's been since that 2019 series. So he's been on the ball a lot. He's been successful. Last night against the other night against the Clippers, he basically took whatever matchup they had. Nick Batum, I'll take you in. I'm hitting the jumper on you. Luke Kennard, too small. Terrence Mann, too small. Oh, you're gonna switch a big onto me? All right, I'm gonna go right by Isaiah Hartenstein and I'm gonna make this layup. Basically, Pascal Siakam has become this type of player where if you're going to guard him in single coverage, you better have an elite wing stopper with length. And if you don't have that guy, you better bring help because he's going to murder them. And that's what happens. And then what happened? The Clippers, after giving up 30 points in 3 quarters to Pascal Siakam, said, all right, send the trap every single time down. So they basically take Pascal out of the game. And then it goes to, you know, the second attacker on the Raptors is Scottie Barnes in a 4-on-3 situation. It's been those two, like, those two have basically carried the team over this win stretch, and you're kind of seeing the future. And this kind of goes back to, it's funny when you think back to the beginning of the season, people were like, oh, well, got to trade one, right? Like a lot of NBA media people down south were also saying, well, I guess Scottie Barnes is spell the end of Pascal Siakam. But the fact of the matter is having like big, long wings who can basically play 1 through 5 positionally, they can run point. They can be the low man in the paint. Like,
you can never have too many.
Yeah, just have as many. And the fact that Pascal started taking threes now, especially catch and shoot threes, and I love it. His mentality. He said in his post game the other night, he's like, I looked at it and I was like, oh, I'm just not taking enough threes. I got to get 5 to 6 attempts. So he's like, now my goal is to get 5 to 6 attempts a game going through. And he's been a great catch and shoot 3-point shooter all season. And with Scottie being on ball more, he's able to get more of these looks. Yeah. And now you're seeing like in the corner, he's shooting like 46% for the season or something like that. So it's really exciting to see Pascal Siakam basically come back to like his 2019 form in a role sense, but being just like his toolbox is just like exploding with more than he's ever had.
He's got a bag, as the kids would say. There was such a stretch in February. You kind of mentioned it, where he was kind of down. He had, you know, a couple of 8-point games, which is just not something that we see from Pascal Siakam. I don't think he hit 20 points for like a 5 or 6 game stretch, and he just wasn't in it. And it was very clear that something was bothering him. He was sick, I think, is what has been reported. But since then, he's come right back. Like, he hasn't had an extended stretch where he's played terribly at all, except when we know there's a malady. And, you know, Fred was hurt also, and OG was hurt. So it's not like you could really rest Pascal in that time. The Raptors just did not have, they couldn't afford to do something like that. But since then, Pascal has just been phenomenal. I think he has a case as an all-NBA guard. The first team seems locked up if you have your 3 MVP candidates, depending on how you sort of break up the center versus forward role. Is it 3 big men? Is that how they do it? Or just that's just all-star?
All-NBA is, I think,
class. Center and 2 forwards.
Yeah, so they do the center and 2 forwards. But one of the funky things is, depending on how the voting breaks out, is Pascal Siakam by position, he's actually played a lot of center for the Raptors, apparently, this season, because I guess in the small ball lineups, he ends up being classified as a center.
So you're saying if we're playing Poeltl in the game and you see forward center, you might be, it might be Pascal Siakam.
That it might be Pascal Siakam. So I think a lot of, some people have mentioned that there's a possibility of Pascal making third team all NBA as, weirdly enough, as a center, or, you know, sneaking in the second team as a center.
How does that even work? You have Jokic, you have Embiid, you have Cat.
Yeah, so you have there would be play with them, like, if they can fit under the forward and center spots.
Mm.
Like, maybe, like, is Gobert having a better season than Pascal Siakam? I don't know. I would question it. He's a great player, and undoubtedly a great player, but is he? Of course, that's kind of positional stuff. I do think Pascal, though, is having an All-NBA season. And again, this last stretch is going to be great for him to kind of lay down the groundwork to sneak in there. Realistically, I think the biggest thing for Pascal is going to be whatever happens in the playoffs is when he's fine, like him being fully healthy and him being able to like actually control his destiny and be able to play the way that he knows he can play. There's no reason why he can't have a great playoff performance, especially with the team around them if they're healthy. So that's when I think the switch is going to flip for Pascal Siakam in the general media, but he's been incredible and there's really nothing more to say.
I mean, I agree with you. I think, you know, All-NBA is, of course, a regular season award, and we've seen it with the conversation around Pascal Siakam this season. You've mentioned it already at the top of the season. We were hearing, well, you got Scotty, so that means the Raptors are moving off of Pascal Siakam, which was ludicrous. But also, the conversation about Pascal Siakam's game seems to be very slow early on in the season. And there's this belief that, oh, well, we've seen him do it before, but can he do it in the playoffs? Yeah, he won a championship. What are you guys talking about? But I think that's where his name needs to be solidified. In order for the larger conversation on Pascal Siakam to actually catch up to his play right now, he's going to need to do it on the biggest stage. And I think a large part of it is going to be, first, can the Raptors find themselves in the top six? Or can they, for one, make the playoffs? Because there's no guarantee they even make the playoffs. If they're in a play-in scenario, anything can happen. We've seen both the Hornets and the Hawks already beat the Raptors by like 30 points each. So we've seen that. So for one, I think it's making the playoffs. And two, what he does in the playoffs, that's really going to change the larger narrative with him.
And while the playoffs won't matter for the voting, but like, you know that it'll matter.
It's a regular season. Forward, right? Yeah, exactly.
Like Jason Tatum, he's had some great playoff performances. And because of those big performances, like even if Jason Tatum is having a bad first half of the season, he's in the All-Star consideration, right? Yeah. Because like there is a baseline that people are like, oh, it's a prove it thing, right? Like if you proved it in the playoffs, then it kind of like people can overlook whatever regular season you're having. And Jason Tatum, he's going to be all NBA as well. He's been incredible since the All-Star break. So there's not complaints there. But again, for Pascal Siakam, I think there's still that little bit of stink that still remains from that bubble run, which for anybody who knows, it's like very easy to understand why Pascal wasn't good in that. I don't think it has anything to do with him as a player and more just very difficult circumstances. So this playoff run, I think, is going to be really important. I think that's something to look forward to for Pascal Siakam.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And that's exactly how I was trying to frame it. So we think that he could possibly be all NBA. I'm going to say I want him to be, but I agree with you. I don't think that necessarily changes the narrative. I think what's going to happen is good playoffs and moving forward, good things. Speaking of good things, and a good run, Scotty Barnes, Pascal Siakam's, who can I just say their chemistry on the court is like, it's been great since like early on. I feel like people were wondering how the two would fit together more than anything. But they just play off of each other so well. Scotty Barnes, I really want to focus in on the rookie of the year race, because that seems to be what everyone is talking about. You can't go 5 minutes without hearing a Raptors fan and a Cavs fan somewhere along the way arguing about who should be rookie of the year. And it does seem like Cade Cunningham has really, with his stellar play in March, snuck his way right into the top two sometimes, depending on whose ballot you're talking about, but most often top three. What are your thoughts on the rookie of the year race, and where would you position Scotty Barnes?
So I think Cade Cunningham's been great. He's been awesome, especially in the second half of the season. He's been really good. My only thing is, I think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to, it's like, well, you've got two other rookies who are also playing phenomenal basketball in Evan Mobley and Scotty Barnes, and they're doing it on
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Winning teams, like they're actually, and it's not just that they're on a winning team, but they're directly contributing to those teams winning, right? Like the Raptors don't win games without Scottie Barnes, the same way that the Cavs don't win games without Evan Mobley, because they're big parts of what they do. Like just looking at Scottie Barnes, like over, like since the All-Star break, since he's come back from that Rising Stars performance where he couldn't do anything, the kid is averaging 37 minutes a game, right? In the absence of OG Anunoby, the absence of Fred VanVleet, Gary Trent being in and out. He's averaging 37 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Scoring 19 points a game, 8 rebounds, 3 assists on 56% shooting.
That's crazy.
So he's been unreal. He's been playing point. He's been playing center. He's been doing everything. And then he's been guarding on the perimeter, whoever they throw him on, with sometimes a good result, sometimes a bad result. But he's been energy expending and been like stamping his name on every single game. Every single win, almost every single one of them, you can look and be like, oh, Scotty's stretch. Oh, this is a stretch that Scotty basically put this game away. Last night against the Clippers, what does Scotty do? He dunks all over them. Against the Lakers, Scotty starts the game off just 6 straight buckets in the, right at the rim, right? Just like strolling in there. So it's, I think for me, it's pretty clear it's 1 and 2, Scotty and Mobley. And it's going to be tough. I don't know how the votes are going to lay out. Me personally, it's a 50-50. I would toss a coin because, like, again, Evan Mobley is great. Like, yeah, he's not going to create his own offense because he's a big guy. That's just not his role. But like him being as elite as he is defensively, and I think people don't give it credit in the same way, because like, oh, Scotty guards all the positions and like he does at a good level and he has some weaknesses on the perimeter stuff, but he's able to do all the different things. Evan Mobley guards in a prototype big role, but he can switch out to the perimeter guards and stuff like that. But his comes from a prototype of a big, while Scotty's more of a prototype 1 through 5, just like throw the guy on him, right? Wing type defender. And I think people don't give enough credit to how hard it is as a big guy. Like big guys take forever to learn how NBA defenses. So for Evan Mobley to basically be like an all NBA level type defender as a big in his rookie season, that's a big deal. And I know that Raptor fans like to kind of disparage it, but it is a really massive thing. And Evan Mobley's been awesome. And you know what? Scotty's got another chance against the Cavs to kind of put a stamp on things. He has a big performance. He keeps closing out the way he has. OG's out for a little bit with his finger. We're unsure. So there's the opportunity there for Scotty to kind of wrestle and take a hold of it. I think when it comes down to it, it'll just matter, again, with the voters. How many voters are going to, you know, give Scotty credit for basically creating a lot of his own offense and being like this like 5-tool player? And I think the reason Scotty might not get as many votes is a function of the Raptors developing him. The Raptors have thrown him in so many different modes. If the Raptors wanted, they could make Scotty basically do the things he's best at every single game. He could average like 20, 22 points, be super efficient and not be expanding his game, but they've challenged him, shoot the 3-ball. They've challenged him, be the point guard, run the team. They've challenged him, be the big man. So they have, and they've challenged him defensively. Instead of like Scotty's best at defense when he can see the defense in front of him, so when he's starting at the bottom in one of the big man roles, but they've thrown him on the perimeter as many times as he wants, and sometimes he gets beat, sometimes like he's playing every single different role on defense, and some of them he's good at, some of them he's not so good at. But the Raptors have taken a path of developing him as an all-around player. So his numbers in his rookie season might not be as good as they possibly could have been if he was playing an optimized role, which Evan Mobley, I do feel, is playing in his optimal role. Like, they're not asking him to do things outside of what his comfort level would be for development. So that, I think, is the core argument that'll be between the two. But again, it's going to be very close. I have no idea how it's going to end up.
I agree. I keep coming back to just, it doesn't work without Evan Mobley. Like, the idea that you're starting Lauri Markkanen, Jared Allen, and Evan Mobley together, you're starting three guys that essentially are 7-foot just behemoth men, and Lauri Markkanen, not a particularly good defender, doesn't work without Evan Mobley. Even just starting Jared Allen and Evan Mobley together, and a large part of that is Jared Allen, they're kind of a duo that fit so, like, symbiotically together, and it's because of the utility knife that Evan Mobley is. But Scottie Barnes is just great. I think I would honestly, it's the bias in me, I'm not going to have an unbiased opinion about this, but just to give Cade some love here, and also Jalen Green, who's really stepped it up lately, the Pistons somehow are 500 since the All-Star break, which feels to say, so it's not just that they're beating up on the Toronto Raptors, they're 500, and it does help, that is one of their wins, but they're 500 since the All-Star break, and this is a team that, you know, unfortunately for the Raptors, you sort of get their second round pick, hoping that they'd be the worst team in the league. But Cade Cunningham and Dwayne Casey are not letting that happen there. So Cade is special. This entire rookie class is special. We're not even getting into the Wagners and the Giddies and everybody else that's just made this like the craziest thing about this class to me is, for one, yes, I think Evan Mobley, Cade Cunningham, And Scottie Barnes would be the rookie of the year in any class that they would have been drafted in. Like, think about how crazy it was. We were like, Malcolm Brogdon won rookie of the year as like a 50-year-old man. Like, there was debates about, you know, whether LaMelo should win rookie of the year, even not playing however many games he didn't play and all of that other stuff. Like, these debates would not have existed. Credit to Anthony Edwards.
One of the credits,
fantastic,
like,
as well.
In previous years, like, there haven't been multiple rookies, and there haven't even been multiple healthy rookies. Like, the best rookies have been injured a lot of these past few seasons, right? Whether it be Zion, and so you have Ja, right? But Zion's injured. Yeah. Whether, like, every single class this year, they've all been healthy. They've all been playing, like, a ton of games.
Yeah.
It's been a very special class, and honestly, it's kind of scary because, like, these guys are all in the Eastern Conference and they're going to be there for the next 7 years. So Cade, Scotty, and Evan at the minimum. And then who knows? Jalen Suggs might put it together as well. You know, there's
and Wagner's doing well. He's leading the rookies in points right now. I'm not sure. I think it might be Cade. But he's definitely right up there as well. It's going to be really fun. Like, it's just, it's so ridiculous. I hope that, my question to you here, do you think record is going to play a part at all? If the Raptors manage to jump the Cavs, is it more, well, that's the Raptors and maybe they were just healthier than the Cavs this season? Or do you think that actually will come to play when talking about rookie of the year?
I think as it comes down the stretch, I think when it comes to the final day, if, like, the Cavs and Raptors record's pretty close, I don't think it'll matter as much, because I think the Cavs get more credit because there's just less expected of them, right? There's less, they're the younger team.
Yeah.
So there'll be more credit given to Evan Mobley there. Might rightfully so, to be honest. I don't think anybody expected much from the Cavs. But if it's like the Raptors have surged up to like fourth or fifth and the Cavs have somehow cratered down to like seven or eight, you know, I don't think they'll get to eight, but like they'll crater like seven and a distant seven.
They can get to eight if they lose the play. No. If they lose the play and they get to eight, right?
Yeah, but like record-wise for the regular season, there'd still be probably seven, right? So I think that maybe, but again, it's really just going to come down to, hey, if Scottie's playing like he's been playing this last couple weeks where he's been hyper-aggressive and just been going to get his own, I think their rookie of the year race is still open, and it's for the taking. If he can close it out strong here, I think he can still take it. But Evan Mobley has a lot of ground ahead of him just because of what he's done throughout this whole season up to this point.
So we talked a lot about Pascal Siakam and Scottie Barnes. And last week with KD, like I said, coming off of losses to the Pistons and the Magic, wasn't great time. So I was trying to find some positivity. And we went through the development game because it is a development season. And I got her to tell me what each you know, rotational Raptor should work on next season, or what you wanted to see them develop next season. But right now, things are great. It's a positive day. It's a positive vibe. So I wanted to twist this question and ask you, what are some positives you've already seen from guys this season? Some things that maybe are a surprise to you, some things that they've developed over the year. So I'm going to go rapid fire, and I'm just going to start listing off some Raptors. And we're going to start with our rookie of the year, Scotty Barnes. What is a development in his game that's been a pleasant surprise to you?
His post game had just like exploded, where like he went from starting the season like just like kind of playing like this face up guard. Sometimes he would kind of come off DHO and attack the basket, right? But now he's just like getting face, getting downhill, attacking, getting into the post, 3-2 bumps, and he's going spinning over either shoulder, finishing. And it's just, I think with Scotty, it's not even, I think every day is like a positive development, but just to be able to see him take on so many roles so quickly,
yeah,
it's been incredible. I didn't think that he'd be able to be this much of a 5-tool player, where it's like he literally can be any role on the team.
Starting point guard one day, starting center the next.
Yeah, so like there's nothing but positives there. His touch around the basket is so much better than I thought it would be, and it's improved. Like, he's gotten more downhill, he's gotten more focused, and especially these last like couple weeks, he's kind of realized, like, oh, I should be getting my offense. And him learning to kind of balance the team game versus when he's the option to score has been incredible. Like, him leading the bench units has been like, that's been probably my favorite development of the season. Is like, okay, he knows how he can get his own when needed.
Yeah, that's been my fave as well. All right, so next up, Gary Trent Jr.
Gary Trent Jr., positive development. Well, the defense is obvious, right? Like, not that he's the best defender still, but, like, he's become at least not an active negative, right? And he has, like, his fast hands. Like, he disrupts a lot of people's handles. And he gets under people's skin. Like, just to him being that much of a disruptor on defense, for good and bad sometimes. But it's good to have that guy. And that's been one positive. And the other positive has just been him being able to fit his offense into the team concept. Mm-hmm. So last season, I think when he first joined, it was kind of like, oh, Gary's hitting shots. Gary's just going to keep shooting shots, right? And it felt like it was a separate offense from the team.
To be fair, he was playing with a team that was very much tanking, and he was given the opportunity to do that. Yes.
Yeah. But this season, that was, I think early in the season, it was a kind of a question mark. It's like, okay, how do we kind of fit in his, like, pump fake, one dribble into a mid-range, and then the way he's kind of developed in, you know, relocating off ball, making sure that he's in the right spots, and then basically able to find his offense within the team concept has been incredible. And just the fact that he's been such a lightning rod has been a great positive development. The fact that he's been able to fit his game in seamlessly, and because of the way he's fitted in, that's why when Gary's hot, the team can just easily get him looks over and over and over again, because there's multiple ways to get Gary open, and he knows how to use the team and use his teammates to do that. And recently, he's also started to learn how to use his gravity to get shots for other people.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe it was just because he was sick, but hey, that Clippers game, he drew a defender.
He was finding people quite often.
He found two open threes, so good for Gary.
No, that's fun. He was leading the league in deflections for a good chunk of the season. I mean, you're exactly right. Next up, a guy we actually haven't seen quite much of recently is OG Anunoby. Some positives from him. I hope we can get him back, because he matters so much to this team.
Oh, I think the biggest positive is that kind of what he showed early in the season was that he could, like, once he got going and he kind of found a shot again, he was legitimately carrying the team. Yeah. Like, he had a couple, like, iffy games to start, which was all the Raptors, as they're trying to find their rotation, and they were playing Goran Dragic for who knows why. But once they kind of settled in, like, OG was playing great until he hurt his finger. And the three-point shot might be down this season, which is what it is. Like, you live with it. But I think OG's role as being basically, like, he's the best defender on the team. I think Fred is a guard, so it's a little bit different. But you know when OG's missing, because he just ices every single hole. There's like, until we got Thad Young, there was no player that does all the different things that OG kind of does. And Thad Young is like very much an old player, right? Like, he's only like 20% of what maybe OG does. But
yeah,
OG Anunoby, the fact that he was basically able to grow his game, like, you saw him doing more stuff off the dribble, you're seeing him now take these fadeaways, take these mid-range shots, do some creation, And his post game has been unreal. Like, I think the one thing that we were worried about was, okay, OG, you're taking all these possessions. Like, his true shooting's going to come down. And it has, mostly because of the jump shots. But it's mostly been him trying to expand his game. Like, his core game still hyper efficient. He gets to the bucket whenever he wants and he puts it in the hole. And we've seen him have really big moments this season in leadership. So the biggest thing with OG is being able to kind of take a leadership role on this team. And that's been a positive development throughout. And I feel bad that he's been hurt because it's been dumb injuries. But if we had OG fully healthy with the squad, I think it would be scary
times. Scary times. And even to the three-point shot, I know, like, by numbers it's been down, but tell me if I'm wrong, but it feels like he goes through stretches where, like, when he's healthy, it's lights out. It's, like, OG 40%+. And then he goes through, like, really cold stretches where he just can't hit a shot. And that's kind of – and you can kind of chalk that up to, like, oh, clearly his finger's bothering him or there's some other nagging injury there.
Yeah.
Okay, so who is next on my rapid fire board? Pascal Siakam.
What can we say? We already talked about Pascal so much. Basically, he's just a better version. He's the best version of himself. I think, again, with him, it's just now, before, where he in 2019, he was kind of like every single possession down, he was like, oh, can I do this? And then he just do something.
Yeah.
Now it's like he knows what he's doing. Yep. He knows exactly what he's looking for. He knows exactly how to manipulate the defense. He knows exactly who's going to be open. He understands his role as a playmaker. He's basically just matured as a player.
Yeah.
And like, he's a legitimate leader of the team, and there's really no question about his role and how good he is, and the sky's the limit for him, right?
It's so fluid. Yeah. And I don't think I would have ever called him a fluid player. Like, it looked very herky-jerky. He looked like he was in his head. He looked like he would question himself in certain moments, and now he just the confidence with which he plays is
from before, where you kind of like have an idea and he's like, all right, let me see, and then I'll just kind of react to it on the go. And now it's like, no, I know exactly what I'm doing. I'm going to set up my defender this way, go back the other way, and I know I'm going to be open here. I'm going to get the shot off. And it's just been like, you're basically watching him come into his own as a professional and as like a number one option. And it's been fantastic. That's just my favorite development.
Fred VanVleet, another so much fun to watch.
The best development, that he basically became Kyle Lowry.
I mean,
well, I think the future for Fred in this league, I think we saw it in that first round bubble series against the Nets. Of course, it was like some ghost Nets team that had a bunch of G Leaguers there playing because they had a bunch of injuries. But we saw in that series, Fred was just like high volume 3-point shooter off the high pick and roll, taking deep threes, being very aggressive, and he hit a ton of threes. And I was like, hey, if he's healthy enough, he should be able to do this long term, like, in a bigger role. And that's what he's basically done this season. We saw some of it last season before COVID, and for him to basically come out and say, hey, I'm going to be the best defender, I'm going to play the most minutes, and I'm going to lead this team. He is undoubtedly the leader of the team, and he took his game up a level with his three ball and being able to, like, the mid-range shot has been fantastic for him. So him just being able to take that next step and literally become the leader of the team after Kyle Lowry left is like, that's, I think, the only thing that matters when it comes to Fred. And now he's like solidified as being like, you know, a top point guard in this league.
Which is crazy to say. Now, some of the young guys that I skipped over here, Precious Achiuwa, my fave. Can't say enough good things about him. We didn't even talk about him at all in today's episode. Give me some positive development from Achiuwa.
Presh Curry, as people call him on Twitter now. Hey, Precious Achiuwa went from like making me question if the guy had ever picked up a basketball at the start of the season with some of the plays he's making, to like, now it's like, is he the best player on the floor right now? Like, he's making much more sound decisions. He's attacking the basket well. He's finishing at the basket a bit better now.
Yeah.
He's just making better decisions of what shots to take and when to take them. And he's just become a knockdown 3-point shooter, which is wow. And I think the biggest development in Precious's game has just been unlocking him as a defender, one through five. So he's not just a big guy defender. It's like, oh, you can throw him on anybody and he can guard them. And his foot speed is incredible. So just seeing Precious kind of like learn the game of basketball throughout the season and pick a spot, that's probably been the best development there. Cause he is the most.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners, So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Athletic player on the floor every time he steps out. I think he's like a top three most athletic player in the league. Yeah. It's like given his size, his strength, and his speed, he's so fast. The court looks too small for him most of the time. So it's going to be a fun to see him grow the next couple of years.
I mean, look, I can't even – his three-point shooting, it's wild to me because it's not – he doesn't even hit rim. I've said this a few times. It's like – it's always money. It's something that you can bank on. Like, I've just been killing that Max Kellerman, you know, Steph Iguodala, who do I want taking the last shot? I want Achiuwa. He has been insane. What are his numbers here?
All-star break.
He's all-star like a 46.5%, 44.7% from deep. That's insane.
It's been absurd. And it's like, that's kind of like, if you can get that from Precious, like, wow, like you've now unlocked something in all those lineups. So like sky's the limit for this team when these guys are like growing like this. And it's kind of insane that every single player is kind of growing in every single direction where it's like, oh no, these players can't just do one thing. They can do all the things. So
I mean, like that's kind of like, it's so fun to watch this team grow. Cause yes, there are going to be lots of hiccups. We're going to see the growing pains. There are going to be days where you're like, what is even happening? And that's still going to happen with guys like Precious. He's not going to shoot 45% forever or maybe, well, I don't know. But one of my favorite things is like watching this team. It's Masai Ujiri building these, you know, defensive minded players for one, tall, long, switchy, and just can handle the ball, can play make a little bit, and believing I can teach these guys how to shoot. And when that happens, the way that it can unlock everything on the offensive end, because on the defensive end, we see what they can be, and it will be very scary once it all clicks, when everybody's healthy. I mean, it's unfortunate that OG and Fred have kind of been in and out of the lineup, because like you mentioned, they're probably the two best defenders on the team. But what it can be offensively when everyone is clicking and going, and you can play Fred off ball and he is your best three-point shooter, and like how that unlocks him, this team just makes me excited. I get giddy talking about them. Thank you everyone for joining us for another episode of Friday Views. I think that wraps it up. We left it on such a positive note because the vibes are good. Thank you for joining me, Asad, and good night everybody.